Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Boulin Brothers. I'm Fred.
I'm Frank.
And we are back again. We do apologize. We've had a few circumstances in life we had to take care of the last couple of weeks, but we are back and ready to discuss some things about tactical manipulation.
Yes.
You know, given some of all the silly stuff going around the world, maybe it would be beneficial for more of us to have a better grasp upon that topic.
You know? Well, actually, would it be tactical manipulation or just manipulation in general?
Well, in general, but I figured we'd start with the tactical, you know, the more minutia stuff first and then work our way out, you know. And you know, we can get into the whole thing, you know, maybe we could get into world domination in another couple episodes or so, you know.
You mean our world domination or just...
Well, I'm sorry. Maybe I let the cat out of the bag. Okay. Well, I might as well say it. To everybody listening, I just want you to know, Frank and Fred, well, we're planning to take over the entire world. And we wanted to keep it a secret for a while, you know, just because we kind of have a little bit of competition right now, but...
Well... But are we still going to go with the plan of doing it on a cruise ship?
Don't tell them everything, Frank. I mean, come on. What?
I mean, never mind. Yeah.
What's the use of having secrets if we divulge everything? I know not everybody is listening to the Frank and Fred show, you know, the Blue Line Brothers, but we are international, of course.
Well, yeah, we are.
I mean, for a couple of knuckle draggers, we're not doing too bad, really. I mean, one or both of our listeners from whatever part of the world they're
well,
from.
And, you know, it could actually just be one listener that keeps crossing across the,
the international dateline or something. Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Yeah, I am. But hey, so, once you hit international waters, we are international.
We are international.
That's all I care about.
So... we figured we'd talk about, we'd get into the military aspect a little bit first. You know, Frank, tell us a little bit about, you know, how you might come across or might engage some tactical manipulation exercises, if you will. You know, you've been a part of FAST teams and all this stuff, so you've trained up for, real world stuff. You were over in the sandbox for a little bit, so... You know, you've had the experience of having to train up for a mission, having to deal with that mission and get back in one piece. So, you know, from your world, you know, on the military side, what are we talking about as far as manipulating on a tactical level?
Well, on a tactical level, it's one of those things like the end product is all that really matters, as long as the object... Or the objective is, shall we say, neutralized, and you get back home safe. That's the main objective. But the little small steps between point A and point C, you have to engage in some form of manipulation. You're going to manipulate the village folks, the town folks, to get what you need, whether that's food, shelter, information, transportation, whatever you're going to need, but you're going to make them feel like they're part of it, they're helping you, or they're going to benefit from it.
In other words, you get what you need without them really realizing what they're doing for you.
Right. Yeah, and in any group, you know, you're only as good as the sum of the total. You know, it's like each individual person has their strong points and their weak points. My strong point is I was always the person that could find or acquire things.
Hence the need for you to turn a Costco into a drive-thru.
There you go.
See, I'm catching on.
There you go.
Gotcha.
You know, and there may be there may be a guy on the team that he's got the gift of gab. You know, he could, the little silver tongue devil. You know, there may be a guy that, you know, whatever their strong suits are, you put them together as a whole and you're a force to be reckoned with. Not so much firepower wise or, I mean, but just from the manipulation standpoint. You know, you have to understand who you're dealing with. And, you know, it takes a little bit of research to understand that particular group, what they hold sacred. You know, as an example, in America, you know, the gun culture is very top of the mark. You go over to certain Middle Eastern countries and guns they're nothing. I mean, they're just something to collect dust. They're more, they hold a blade or an axe or something like that higher than a gun. So I find that out and I strap my tomahawk to the side and I walk into an establishment. Well, guess what? I have just manipulated them because now they see, oh, okay, you know, he's got a tomahawk. He must be good. He's one of us.
So you want to place yourself more or closer to their level,
mm-hmm.
As far as an acceptance level.
And then once you get that acceptance, and then and I use that term very, very loosely, but once you get on the same level, you know, then you start poking and prodding and seeing how far you can get with what you need or want. And I mean, okay, so you may make a few promises or, you know, pass out a few MREs or, you know, an apple here and there. Okay, you know, the end justifies the means.
Well, and you're also starting to get into that trial and error concept as well. Mm-hmm. Because you may strike it rich with one or two offerings as opposed to something else. And
right. And, you know, and that's just a small little snapshot. But you can take that same concept and you could literally manipulate the whole population of a country.
Mm-hmm.
Or, say, North America, Canada, South America, Central America. Just by that one concept.
Well, yeah, exactly. And you're talking about on an acceptance level, so, you know, a positive level.
Mm-hmm.
There again, you also have the negative level as far as if you impose some level of fear into
and then a
group of people, and then you try to manipulate them that way through fear.
So you have positive, you have negative, which would be your negative would be your fear factor. But you also have one, it's handouts. There are certain handouts that the government would give, or the opposing, you know, force that's coming into that country. Hey, we'll offer you this. Just help us out.
Right.
And, you know, it's not good, it's not bad, but it's right in the middle. But you're still getting what you want.
Well, and of course, you're reinforcing the positive note on that. And once again, if you can keep those people focused on the positive as opposed to the negative that they might have to experience in a little bit,
yeah,
then they're more willing to embrace whatever you're offering.
And you know, this is a subject that we very seldom ever, I don't think we've ever brought it up, but the quickest and easiest way to manipulate the masses is through religion.
Oh, of course.
You know, even on the military side of the house, you know, it's religion. If I can come in and I can gain the church's support, guess what? I got it made.
Well, yeah, I don't care if it's a church or a voodoo or whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you're right. Excuse me.
Because, I mean, think of how many atrocities that have been committed in the name of, insert your religion here, over the centuries in history.
Yeah, I still have a penchant for grape Kool-Aid, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I mean, I find myself every once in a while, I need some grape Kool-Aid. Yeah. People that know me know that I suck up tea like it's nothing, but there are times where I need a little bit of grape Kool-Aid.
Okay, hang on. I don't think they're on the same mental level. You have to explain that one to the
really?
Should, people out
you
know, there.
You mean they're not familiar with Mr. Jones?
did you know that Mr. Jones was actually in a small Midwestern town?
Yes.
Well, not really a small, but kind of a medium-sized Midwestern town?
Yes. He came from not far away at all.
Exactly. Yes.
He ended up way far away, but he didn't start out way far away. No. But that does bring up a great my second favorite Sun Tzu quote.
Wait! I'm not done.
Well, okay. I'm trying to glass this over, but it's just not working, is it?
So when they pulled in the 5 tons, they all jumped out. Did they go, "Hey, Kool-Aid"?
It was the Kool-Aid man that came busting through the wall.
Okay, I'm done now.
That's what it was. It was the Kool-Aid man. That was the first recorded incident of the Kool-Aid man busting through a wall. the original flavor was indeed grape.
Yeah, but that one had a little kick to it, didn't it?
It had some kick, yes.
Okay. Oh, well, that went
way off the rails.
Sideways on that
way
one.
Way off the rails. But hey, but it does lead me to my second favorite Sun Tzu quote of all time, which is, all of war is deception, right? So sometimes you need a little grape Kool-Aid to cause the deception. Sometimes you don't. You know, it depends upon, what catalyst, if you will, you choose to employ to get people to do what you want them to do without them really realizing that they're doing it.
Well, I will tell you, there was a... depending on how you look at him, leader, dictator, Antichrist, whatever you want to call him, in World War II, he had that down to an art. He could get people to do the most
horrific acts.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they gladly went along with it.
And he is a great example of the trial and error method, because he was actually exiled from that country prior to his takeover.
Right.
He did try and fail, a couple of times, actually. He failed not on the same level each time, but he, once again, got a little better, and then bam,
he's... Well, the poster child for manipulation, if you will, is Rasputin.
Well, that's true, too.
I mean, think he came from living in a dirt hut to hobnobbing with the Tsar.
Yes.
And all of the ladies eating their lemon cakes and everything
else. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's how he got popular with the ladies. Well, and actually, there are some excellent examples throughout history of... I'm trying to think, actually.
And, if you think about it, the ones that were very proficient at manipulation ended up being mass murderers.
Oh, yes. Well,
so you have Hitler, you have Pol Pot, you have the Khmer Rouge, Genghis Khan. I mean,
and you're talking on a political, level there, but once again, you hit the nail on the head, because once again, even all the way down to, once again, crimes committed against other people, we have various types of people. It's not just young women, most of the big crime stories involve younger women or something like
the
that.
The ones being happened not too long ago, Heaven's Gate.
Heaven's Gate.
The list goes on and on, and all that boils down to They had a charismatic manipulator.
He was an amoral manipulator.
And they were good at what they did.
And that's the whole... And I think a lot of that fact... Well, the factor of being amoral had a lot to do with that. Because literally they did not think... They did not have... And take an abnormal psychology class to get into the various aspects of the brain that doesn't fully function here and there and all that stuff. I'm not going to get into all this stuff. But... The whole thing is, yes, not being able to act without concern for moral balance or any type like that. So, yes. And many of those people that you mentioned, once again, the other important part to consider is, well, what's the end result? What's their target? What are they trying to accomplish? And, of course... They wanted a level of domination.
Yep. They actually wanted world domination.
Yes, eventually. So that's the whole thing. We have people, and that's an important, very, very important consideration with whomever you're dealing, is to find out exactly what they want. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we can break it down to, oh, it's either power or money. But there are specific things. Once again, you know, on a criminal level, there are people, okay, maybe this guy wants his brother broken out of prison or something like that. Or, what you know, there's a specific reason for whatever they're trying to do. And so my point is, once you find that reason, that's when you start to place that person in the palm of your hand as far as being able to conduct a mission of manipulation against them.
Well, and the thing is, I'm sure people are out there listening to this right now going, oh, okay, genius. How do I know that I'm being manipulated? Well, guess what? You don't. If they're good at their job, you will not know you've been manipulated until it's all done.
Well, that brings me to another great point that I try to emphasize. excuse me. Enlightenment just happens to be the greatest weapon known to mankind.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be big, bad, and tough.
Other than the 45 ACP.
Thank you. Well, that's God's caliber.
That's right.
Yes, it is. So, along with the 45 ACP, enlightenment can be your greatest weapon, literally and figuratively. But literally, yes, knowing your surroundings. Once again, this should sound familiar to our listeners. It's funny how a lot of these things come right back to, say, a core essence of... things to consider when conducting your mission in life. So, being knowledgeable of what's around you, okay, what really is around you and what affects your life directly and indirectly, that can help out tremendously because, once again, we find what many crimes of manipulation against the elderly is because, well, when they get to an advanced stage like that, maybe they're no longer living at home, or if they are, you know, they might need a little bit of help here and there, or, you know, a part-time caregiver or what have you. Maybe their memory might be suffering from some level of diminished capacity to where they may not remember everything or exactly what used to be or what they possess now or anything like that. So somebody comes in and, hello, Mrs. Smith, here I'm going to sell you a fleet of Cadillacs, and you need them because you're in retirement, and you need a fleet of Cadillacs. I do. Yes, you do, because if you remember, Mrs. Smith, you owned Cadillacs when you were younger, and you love them. Oh, yes, yes, I love Cadillacs. And boom, here we go. You know.
In order for any manipulation to work, you have to gain the trust, and in that, you're pulling information from that individual by asking or insinuating certain things like, oh, you know, you owned them when you were younger, and oh, well, yes, I did. Okay, there's a tidbit of information that you will use later down the road. Then there's a form of blackmail is always part of it. Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
That's what it comes down to.
You know, here's the deal. You said that you did X, Y, and Z when you were younger. How would you like it if, you know, that information got out and your family and your friends found out that, you know, you used to run around in your skibbies around the square downtown. You know, these are embarrassing things that they don't want to get out. And if they have to play ball and you use that, it smooths things over a lot easier. And then when they find out, well, okay, maybe this isn't the right thing for me to be doing, well, then you have to be a little more forceful.
Right, the classic guilt trip.
And, you know, there are certain stages that it goes through, and then when they get to the acceptance stage, you have achieved your goal,
right,
and they are essentially putty in your hands.
There you go. So that's the thing, and some of the things that we've described are can be easily identified in within the world we currently live. So once again, it may be through fear, it may be through anger. There are a number of emotions upon which these games can be played.
Well, and it's like, you know, here in the United States, for example, there are certain key hot buttons that, you know, the government is trying to do away with. Mainly Second Amendment, things of that nature. All they're doing is they're manipulating we the people. They know that if they say, we're going to do this, we the people are going to react in a way that they want us to.
Right. They may not want us to be angry at this particular time. They may want us to be in fear of something at this particular time. They may want us to be happy about this topic over here versus that one over here, there, or what have you. I mean, and that's what when we talk about a lot of the examples that you brought up were more of a strategic level, you know, as far as either a domination of a region or a country or the world versus a tactical aspect, like what we were talking about, even on the criminal level, as, you know, you have a, you know, whether it be blackmailing elderly victims in order to turn over their wealth or retirement, or maybe somebody is going after young women, you know, for sexual crimes or what have you, and blah, blah, blah. So there are different levels, so different skills can be employed at different times, because once again, on a strategic level, we're talking about a much broader view and a much longer time period. So there are different steps, once again, in order to get to anger, perhaps. Maybe we want them in fear first, you know, so they do certain things to get to the anger and all of this. So once again, it's kind of a stair-step method, depending upon the goal at hand. And that's why I'm saying it goes back to, you know, if you feel like you might if you feel that you're being manipulated, okay, what could be the possible goals? Okay, maybe I'm worth $2 billion, and well, it's widely known that I bank at ABC Bank down the street, and once again, maybe it's not too hard to get some background information from somebody there or what have you, and realize, hey, that's just enough for me. Hey, if I'm not thinking about, you know, being victimized in a crime, maybe I might blurt out something on the telephone in a basic conversation and stuff like that. As opposed to, once again, being in, I should say, better control of your immediate surroundings to understand that, you know what, the reason I bank at ABC Bank is because no one solicits me for anything or any, you know, banking tools, if you will, or what have you. So if somebody does contact me, sorry, you're full of poop, you know, yeah. Goodbye. Okay, whatever. Or if I get an email, it's like from such and such insurance company. No, I've never elicited any quotes from anybody in the last 2 or 3 years for insurance. So nobody should be sending me, you know, a solicitation for a quote. So guess what? Boom. I'm not even opening that sucker because I don't want some, you know, virus to, you know, infiltrate my computer and do whatever. So a lot of time it goes back to some commonsensical based things that, hey, if you're in better control of your own situation, you'll be there's much less propensity that you could fall victim for games of manipulation, I guess, is a good way to put it.
And the thing, if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is.
Oh, exactly.
You know, and if it gets to the point, like, you get a phone call and says, hey, hi, how you doing? I'm Prince so-and-so. I'm going to send you a check for $9 million. Just send me back $1 million and you can keep the rest.
Right.
I mean, come on.
How does that make sense? I mean, now, once again, they target people from some type of mental deficiency of some sort.
You target the mentally challenged, the economically challenged, and you know, it's that idea of I'm gonna get free money more than I've ever had in my entire life. I'm gonna do this. Common sense goes out the window. You're focused in on the free money.
And, hey, you know, that's how. If a couple of knuckle draggers can start a podcast and make $2 billion a year, I mean, anybody can. Well, yeah, I need money quickly. We just have to figure out. You know, I'm
just waiting for that $2 billion to come in.
Well, that's what I was saying. I mean, we got the knuckle dragger part down, and we got the podcast down. We just need the $2 billion.
Yeah,
we'll be all set.
I'd be happy with a dollar.
Well, that could come eventually.
Yeah.
You know, but a dollar may not be worth anything. It might be the ruby or the rupel or the yuan or something like that. But at any rate, but back to the tactical aspect of things, okay? We have, excuse me, a tactical level that on the law enforcement side for the guys and gals that may still be, you know, patrolling the streets and back alleys and all this stuff. Especially now, of course, you're trying to get those proverbial scales to favor your benefit as much as possible. Because the whole idea is to not have to get, you know, engage in a physical confrontation or something involving firearms or something like that at all. If once again, no matter how big, bad, and tough you might be, you know, engaging in a confrontation like that just raises your chances of getting hurt, maimed, or killed by about $1 million or so.
And sued.
Oh, yes. Let's not mention vicarious liability.
Yeah.
Let's not, in this world, you talk about a four-letter word. There you go. Two four-letter words put together. But within a training scenario, when I was out west, I worked for a sheriff's office, and at the time of being hired out there, I had about 15 years experience or so from the Midwest. And when I went out there, I had a lot to learn in a very short time to learn it. So I had to learn a different state's laws and all kinds of stuff. And I also had to literally learn the lay of the land out there. I didn't know anything about that county until I actually got a job. So I wasn't actually expecting to get it so quickly. And I found myself having to learn the streets and the neighborhoods and all this stuff, as well as everything else within that county in a very short period of time. And that county department was, I'm very happy that I was a part of that department, because they prided themselves in professionalism and tactical training and all that. They were very, very big on, you know, the average patrol deputy being as tactically minded as possible, which was great. And even nowadays, you know, we talked about this a little bit before and through some of the training options and stuff now, that that's just not necessarily the case. So at any rate, going through the FTO program, we had something called the Skills Academy class. It was about a month or so long before I actually entered my field training, and that was to ramp up the new guys and gals on how that department functioned and why they functioned the way they did, and command and control and the whole nine yards. It was a very tactically based skills academy, which I thought was wonderful. We spent a whole lot of time shooting, moving, and communicating, what we refer to. And we did a whole lot of force-on-force training, a whole lot of felony traffic stop training, a lot of building searches, and all kinds of stuff that you really need to not only understand as an officer or a deputy, but you really need to be adept at doing it. That's the whole thing I think a lot of people fail to realize in some of the penny-pinching situations and administrations and stuff like that. But at any rate, back then, we're talking about 12, 13 years back, I'm going through the Skills Academy, and when I started, we were a class of two. Normally, there's a handful of people at least, but no, it was myself and another guy from a local college. He was a campus cop for a year or two before coming to the sheriff's office. So he was a former Navy CB, by the way. I figured you would really appreciate that, Frank. You know, this guy was top notch on many levels, a real good guy. But he was a Navy CB. So
not to be confused with the Navy SEAL.
Well, true. Yeah, there is a slight difference. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it's like comparing the dodo bird to an eagle.
Well, funny you should bring that up, Frank. Obviously, you benefit from knowing the story that I'm telling. So, yes. We were getting into the hardcore force on force training, if you will. So, simunitions training. So, kind of like paintball. Only the simunitions come out a little higher RPM.
those are paintball for guys with testicles.
Well, yeah, there you go. Yeah, I made a statement. I wore my sweatshirt and my T-shirt, and that was it. I did not wear my vest or extra padding or anything like that. I figured if I'm dumb enough to get shot, then I'm dumb enough to feel the pain.
So, you only do it once.
Oh, let me tell you. Yeah. You'll remember that pain. I'll tell you that. So, but at any rate, our first scenario, if you will, was to enter this room. We had one instructor that played the bad guy that happened to be suicidal, so he was pointing his pistol toward his temple, standing in the corner of a room. Pretty much a squared-off room. As we enter the doorway, once again, with my years of prior experience, I'm always studying as I'm approaching the room. I don't care if it's an alley or a building or whatever. I'm trying to pay attention to everything that I can, suck in everything into my pee little brain, and hopefully I might need to use it later on. So as I'm walking through the door, which we call a fatal funnel, a pedestrian door, and we'll get into more in the fatal funnel here in a little bit. But that is not a place you want to lollygag. Let's just say that. You don't want to just spend a lot of time in that fatal funnel. But at any rate, my partner comes through behind me, and I see a little alcove in this wall between where I'm entering the room and the bad guy. So I decide that I'm going to stage up next to this little alcove because it actually gives me some cover. I could step into or behind that alcove and actually shield myself a little bit from any potential fire coming my way. My partner, on the other hand, decides to walk into what we call no man's land. Now, Frank, you are very familiar with no man's land. As am I, and we both strive very hard never to find ourselves in the middle of no man's land. No man's land is...
Let's paint a picture. You're in the middle of a football field, and you're standing on the 50-yard line with nothing around you. Guess where you are?
No man's land.
Right.
You have zero cover, zero place to run, basically. No shelter I'm using air quotes in the podcast.
The good side about being there is when you do get shot, you won't have to worry about hitting anything on the way down.
Well, that's true, and you've got plenty of place. You've got plenty of room to bleed out.
Yeah, and I mean, and they can you bring the cot in and leisurely pick you up. And,
yes. Yeah, so perfect. You can do a
easy
great,
in, easy out.
Oh yeah, you got plenty of room to do a great death scene. You know, flounder around. You know, get the drama going.
Just like in the movies. Like,
just like in the movies.
Oh, he got me.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Just imagine yourself a target of John Wick. Yeah, and that's exactly. You got plenty of room to do your little death dance and boom. Okay, so my partner stays in no man's land. I'm thinking, holy criminy, here we go. Now I got to worry about my partner and I got to worry about the bad guy. So
I'm getting an aneurysm just thinking about this.
Exactly. Now, I'm standing there and I'm engaging verbally with the bad guy. And we're talking and I'm saying, okay, every probably second and a half to 2 seconds, I'm taking a step in a different direction from where I was originally standing. Maybe a step toward the back or to his right side or my left side or an angle step out. And then I might come back in, but I'm always moving. I never stayed still the entire time as I'm talking to this guy. And I'm talking to the guy, and he keeps his gaze on me. And I'm watching his eyes, and I'm watching his hand with the firearm. And inevitably, I knew from as we were speaking, this guy was shooting me down from everything. So I know we're gonna go violent. Okay, it's just a matter of time. This guy is going nowhere fast. It's almost as if he drank or consumed a great deal of grape Kool-Aid prior to our arrival. Yeah, that's what it was. You know, I'm thinking, oh, crap, man, this dude's already loaded on something. So at any rate, sure enough, the muzzle starts to break that plane from his temple, and I immediately take cover behind the alcove. And I hear and see bang, bang, bang. Okay, so he's shooting out. I drop low into a crouched position, and I come back out from a lower position from where he was expecting me, and I initiate my first fire of volley toward the target. I mean, the bad guy. Oopsie, I didn't mean to get to that. But at any rate, and I throw my first volley of fire his direction and end up hitting him. I come back into cover. He got one other shot or two off, if I remember, and I step back out, and as I'm finishing him off, he's falling backward, and I literally zip him right up. So he's got my paint going right up his face shield. So we stop the scenario, then the instructor behind us starts laying into me, just screaming his head off. I said, and of course, I failed to mention earlier that, you know, when we entered this training, especially guys and gals with experience, they reiterate several times, you know, keep your mouth shut when you're in training. We don't want to know what you know. Your job is to learn how we do things. Okay, we don't give a crap what you did or what you used to do. We give a crap about you absorbing, you know, what we do and how we do it. Okay, so we don't want to hear you. This isn't about you. This is about you learning about us, which I fully understood. Sir, yes, sir, I'll keep my mouth shut, no problem. So the one instructor screaming at me, said, this is the Wild West. You don't give up, you know, land, and here you are ducking and covering, and you just left your partner out there in no man's land, and how in the hell could you do this shit, and why the hell did we even hire you, and all this stuff, and you're not even thinking straight, and blah, 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 blah. I said, whoa, 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 whoa. The other instructor, by that time, gets himself dusted off and gets the helmet off and all this stuff and comes up to me. He stops the other instructor and looks at me and said, you've been shot at before, haven't you? And I just stood there. And he said, by damn it, I know what they told you to do. I want you to give me an answer. Yes, sir. He said, all right. He said, explain the situation. Which one? I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. And he looked at me and says, I was a Marine in Fallujah, the second battle. I said, oh, shit. I said, let me shake your hand now while, you know, before I start running laps around the building or whatever. So, and he looked at me and said, now, he said, explain to me. He said, I want legitimate answers from you. He said, I'm ordering you to answer me again. He said, why were you moving around? And I said, I was protecting my partner in no man's land. And he looked at me, he said, what do you mean? I said, Well, you kept your gaze on me the entire time, which means I knew that you were going to shoot at me first, which gave me an opportunity to shoot back and terminate the situation before you had a chance to shoot my partner in no man's land. He just looked down. He looked back up at me. He said, "You were playing me from the first minute of the scenario, weren't you?"
Bingo!
I said, "Sir, yes, sir. Should I start running laps now, sir?" Or he looked at the other instructor. He said, "If this isn't a situation where the trainee just schooled the instructors," he said, "stop yelling at this guy." He said, "How much of his paint's on me?" We're looking. He said, "All of it." He said, "How much of my paint's on him?" And I had to look, and like, because I thought I got hit, you know, on the at least got winged. And he looked, zero. He said, "Okay." He said, "Why are you screaming at the guy that won the gunfight?" Okay, next scenario. Okay. Woo, here we go. But here's the thing. The points to consider are many here. One, I got lucky to begin with. But two, little subtle movements can be enough to manipulate an entire situation in a tactical environment. Uh-huh. Okay, you don't need to be loud and boisterous. You don't need to be some genius screaming out, you know, some, you know, logical statement somewhere. No. Little itty-bitty things can be enough to draw your subject or your target in, and you have them.
Well, in any situation, it's 80% psychological and 20%.
You know, when I first got into police work, I remember in college, I took some psychology, and it was one of those things. Back then, we were quoted, it was 70% of all human communication is nonverbal. I read in a book a couple of years ago, I think now they're quoting up to 80% of all human communication is nonverbal. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that says a lot in and of itself. It does not take a whole lot at all. And here I am. I had no idea that this bad guy in the scenario just happened to be a highly experienced Marine that's seen probably the worst combat on the planet in the last handful of years. Okay? So take that in consideration. A man that has a great deal of experience and a high level of training for many, many years was still subjected to my manipulation mm-hmm. as a knuckle-dragger. Okay, and well, so it can happen. My point is, it can happen to anybody. It doesn't.
Yeah.
Your pedigree can be spotless and impeccable, and you can still fall victim to a nuance that could end up to be a finer point of manipulation.
Well, in that scenario, you know, he was trying to be the main focus, and you take any human being in any job field that you can imagine, and you put them in a room with somebody who's got a gun to their head, what are they going to do? They're going to cave and cater to him. But when you stole his thunder and you started to manipulate him, it wasn't to take his thunder away. You were trying to keep Dingleberry over here from getting ventilated.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, so there was a byproduct of that, which he got manipulated and didn't even realize it.
One more point, too, I almost forgot to bring up the time scenario mm-hmm. factor, I should say. How many shots do you think my partner was able to get off in that scenario?
Dingleberry?
Yeah.
Probably none.
Thank you very much. His firearm remained at low ready the entire time.
And he probably stood there and looked around like, what the hell just happened?
So that hole from the first round that the bad guy fired until we stopped the scenario was not very long at all, number one.
But probably number two, what, 3 to 5 seconds?
Probably in that neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So once again, now, there's, once again, the distinction that we'll make, too. Force-on-force training is excellent training, okay? It does reinforce a lot of very good habits, but at the same time, it's still not the same thing as real-world environment, no. As an uncontrolled environment. That's what we call the real-world environment. And every scenario is different. Just because I happened to be successful in that particular scenario doesn't mean that I'm going to be successful in every scenario. As far as
this is, once again, you can take that same scenario and run it step by step exactly the same 10 times and you will fail 9 out of 10 times.
There you go.
It's just how it is.
Now, once again, another aspect that I want to reinforce is the trial and error aspect. Because, once again, I started off in a certain fashion verbally with this gentleman. And I realized very quickly things are going to go south no matter what I said. Mm-hmm. And I knew, once again, and I'm not going to get into all that stuff. Every scenario is unique. All right. So it's what your senses tell you. Okay. And you've got, you know, blistering performance. You know, once again, that time factor is much, much faster than what most people can wrap their heads around. That's the whole thing. We have this guy's going south verbally. So non-verbally, you know, I'm sending a different message, but at the same time, I could change up that message if I wanted to. I say the quote-unquote message here. I'm using air quotes on a podcast again. But for instance, maybe my movement wasn't enough for him at the time. If I started to see his eyes gaze toward my partner, I'm going to try something else. Mm-hmm. Because I'm studying him, okay? So whatever the feedback that he's giving me, I've got to process real time, okay? And then if I'm not happy with what I'm seeing or feeling or hearing, whatever the situation might be, I've got to be able to change up that fast or that quickly and try to re-maneuver, or once again, in a non-verbal fashion, I might renegotiate with him as he's telling his story. No, I'm not going to put down the gun. Oh my gosh, my woman left me, and my dog pooped on my shoes today, and all this stuff. And I'm going to go, okay, once again, it might be something that he says that, oh, hey, I can use that, you know, to get his mind off of something or whatever the case might be. The whole aspect is that it's a very fluid situation, and you have to be willing to be just as fluid, I should say. So, saying that and doing it are far two different things. All right.
And I mean, everybody operates under a rules of engagement. Okay. So on the military side of the house, my rules of engagement are so, for lack of better words, lackadaisical. Bad guy looks at me and his barrel comes up past the 90 degree point and it's pointing towards me, I could step over him. I could put two in his face and keep going. Law enforcement side of the house, well, you know, there's 18 more steps past that you have to satisfy before you can do that. You know, but of course, you know, once they point and shoot at you, well, you know, that kind of just gives you the express lane to the end.
Unfortunately, yes. And that's the point. And there again, military and law enforcement, two different ways of getting to the end result, which is stopping the threat.
Yeah.
And we have to stop that threat. We have that responsibility to stop the threat. A civilian does not.
I mean, the law enforcement side is more, it's more verbal, it's more feel-good type of thing. Military side of the house is, okay, I'm on this side of the street, I need to get over there, and you're in my way.
Right.
I can either go around you or I can go over you. Take your pick.
Yep.
Either way, I'm going to advance.
We're going to keep this message simple and and straightforward.
You know,
and it's going to be.
And don't get me wrong. I'm not knocking the law enforcement side of the house. I'm not. Are, you know, the guys on the ground that are face-to-face with the threat, are they throttled? You know, I mean, are they allowed to play in a very small sandbox? Yes, they are. you know, it, they can only do X, Y, and Z, and that's it.
Right. Now, that brings me to another point, too, and I will say that if I had to use verbal direction or intimidation or whatever to manipulate my target, I made sure I never broke one rule, and that is whatever I said, I was prepared to do right then and there. There were no hollow threats. There were no threats, period, ever. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, the very first engagement I had as a sheriff's deputy out there, my very first day actually was in the first half hour of my first FTO shift. My FTO is explaining to me how we can do things as sheriff's deputies, and we can take over, you know, city investigations and do this and back up here and do all this. We're driving by, I look over in this neighborhood and I see a guy with a baseball bat holding three city officers with guns at bay. And we look over and I said, "You mean we can assist with something like that?" And he said, "Yeah, do you want to?" I said, "Well, if you don't mind." "Yeah,
sure.
I'm the trainee. I need experience, right?" He said, "Okay." Boom, we pull over. And he said, "Okay, go do your thing." I said, "Okay, I'll be back in a minute." I go up to one of the city officers and I said, "So what's up?" He goes, "Man, you know, he won't drop the bat. You know, he says he's going to beat the crap out of us. He won't drop the bat." I said, "Well, what's up?" "Well, we got a warrant." I said, "All right. Well, you mind if I talk to him?" "Well, no." I said, "Okay." And I start to walk over. I hesitate. I look back. I said, "Just don't shoot me." And of course, the guy's looking at me. He gives me this weird look. I said, "Oh, no." Because I'm thinking in my head, you goofs have this guy with a baseball bat. He has you at bay for how long now? Okay, please don't shoot me in the back. Okay, I'm going to go approach this guy. So I do. I cautiously approach the guy and I said, "Sir, you know, I'm Deputy So-and-so, So-and-so Sheriff's Office. Would you mind just putting down the bat or handing it to me and you know, just let me know what's going on here?" I said, I just want to help you out. I said, "I don't have any handcuffs out. I'm not trying to put you in bracelets or anything. Just talk to me. Tell me what's going on." He looks at me, "F you little piece of blah, blah, blah. I'll beat your ass with this bat and blah, blah, blah." I said, Okay. Of course, I had my hands, you know, my palms facing him. Please. I said, "Apparently, we got off on the wrong foot." And of course, he just kind of looks at me like, "What?" And I said, "Allow me to start over. Okay?" I said, "I'm Deputy So-and-so, So-and-so Sheriff's Office." I said, "Would you please?" I said, "Please just hand me the bat. That's all." I said, "If we could just talk for a little bit, I'm not going to try to handcuff you. I'm not going to try to arrest you. All I want to do is try to figure out what the real problem here without you flailing the baseball bat. That's all." Once again, "F you, I'm going to kick your butt with this bat and I'm going to shove it up your blah, 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 blah." And I start to lean in, he starts to, once again, I used a little bit of physical manipulation here. He starts to shy away, and right as he does, I grab the bat, and I look at him. I said, "You're going to hand me the bat before I beat your ass with it. And I might just leave you a bloody stump here in the front yard, in front of God and everybody." And he hands me the bat. I said, "Thank you very much." I said, "Now, what's your name?"
"Bob."
I said, "Okay, Bob, what's going on here?" He said, "They said I got a warrant." I said, "Okay, why?" I said, "Don't tell me that you would have, you're completely innocent." I said, "You have an idea, I would assume, of what the warrant's for." He said, "Well, yeah." I said, "Okay, what's up?" "Traffic tickets or what? I mean, some innocuous bullcrap, okay? I mean, just administrative bullcrap. You pay a fine and you'd be fine type of thing."
Yeah.
"Okay, not like you're going to prison for 20 years or anything." I said, "Really? That's what this is all about? Some administrative bullcrap?" He said, "Yes, sir." I said, "All right." I said, "Here's the deal, Bob." I said, "You cooperated with me, and I deeply appreciate it." I said, "Let's go back." I said, "I promised I wasn't going to put handcuffs on you, but I said, I'm going to pat you down, blah, blah, blah. And I'm going to bring one of the officers over. He's going to have to do his thing. But I said, let me check with my supervisor." I said, "I'm still fairly new here in this county. So I said, I'm still learning a lot myself. Let me see what we can do. Make sure that we get you on the right path so you can get this thing taken care of." And he looked at me and said, "You do that for me?" I said, yeah. I said, really? After I threatened to kick your ass with a baseball bat? And I said, yes, sir. I said, I don't take that personally. But I said, once again, I said, I don't lie either. And he said, I really did believe that you were going to beat my ass with that bat. I said, well, sir, that's not my job. I'm not trying to do that. But once again, you know, it did facilitate the end goal, right? I said, you're not hurt, I'm not hurt, and nobody had to get beaten with a baseball bat, right?
But there is that option.
What? So I go back, we take care of things, and I said, yeah. He was happy. Bob was very, very happy, as a matter of fact. He was thinking, he wanted to shake my hand. Of course, we couldn't do it in handcuffs or anything. But the whole point is, once again, something that's, you know, three city cops have a guy at gunpoint with a baseball bat over an administrative warrant, you know, over what? Really? Okay. So, but once again, I hopped back in the truck and I had the window rolled down and Bob was still, you know, everybody was in the earshot of anybody. And my instructor asked me, he said, so what'd you do? I kind of looked back at Bob and the city guys. I said, I gave Bob a wink. I said, well, I just asked politely for the bat. And Bob started laughing. He said, thank you, sir. And I said, have a nice day, Bob. But once again, okay, thinking outside of the proverbial box, and of course, you got to remember that was, what, 11, 12, 13 years ago. different environment, blah, blah, blah. But the end result was nobody got hurt. Peaceful arrest. This guy figured out how to take care of his problem within a week or so. Everybody's happy. All right. What would have happened, we don't know, but how long are you going to, you know, keep a guy at bay at gunpoint with a baseball bat?
I mean, they would have.
Okay, so, but the whole point is, yes, tactical manipulation can be utilized in many situations with very peaceful, successful results if,
you know, given probably another 5 minutes of that show they were involved in, they probably would have holstered, got on dispatch, and said, hey, can you send me a county?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I would
have done. Oh, yes, yes. So, at any rate, gives you a few ideas. We'll be, obviously, readdressing the subject of manipulation many more times down the pike. But, once again, just a few examples. Something to think about. Food or parcels of which to consider in your own world.
Manipulation is not always a bad thing.
It can actually be a very positive thing with very, very positive results.
Yes.
So with that said, I'm Fred.
I'm Frank.
And we're still the Blue Line Brothers, just a couple of knuckle draggers. And oh, by the way, we're just here for cheap entertainment.
Well, I don't like to call myself cheap. I'm middle of the road.
Well, wait until we get to 2 gabillion.
I'm kind of like the middle of the Happy Meal menu.
That's what you're trying to tell me, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're hungry again.
Oh, that's it. Yeah.
Well, we got to sign off now. All right.
All right. Till next time.